The Denver Narrator Show is celebrating its 8th anniversary on March 21st. You can expect to see some of our favorite storytellers. And bonus, Playground Ensemble will be joining us. They're improvising a live musical accompaniment to the entire show.
Next storyteller.
Welcome to the Narrators Podcast.
This podcast collects stories that were told at the Narrators, a monthly storytelling event that features people telling true stories based on a theme.
Jenny Minetti Shippey is not only one of the biggest boosters of the San Diego Narrator Show, she's also one of our most outstanding storytellers. She told this story at the August show at Tiger Tiger Tavern. The theme was crossing over.
Thanks so much to the narrators, to Mary and Robert, for creating this awesome community of storytellers and for all of the storytellers who are here tonight. It is such an honor to get to share a mic and a stage with you, and I'm always super excited to hear new voices and old friends. I feel like old friends now because we've been here for 2 years with the narrators. Yay. So like Mary said, I am a horse trainer, and I'm not just a horse trainer, I'm a person who loves horses and has been historically, for the history of my life, obsessed with horses. So I have studied their bodies in motion for a long time. What that means to me is that I'm one of those people that maybe you like, I'm afraid I'm going to kick this mic over if I get really excited. One of those people who like, I'll just watch horses play together in a pasture. And in fact, one of the lessons that I teach during the winter when it rains here in San Diego is I take all of my like adult amateurs who all they want to do is understand why their horses behave the way that they behave, and maybe then they'll be better friends with them and their horses will love them more. And I'm like, just bring them carrots. They don't care about your feelings. But we'll go and we'll stand and we'll watch the horses play together in the turnout. And I'll talk about what I've learned through a lifetime of studying horses in motion. How many of you know how to ride a horse? Oh man, look at all those hands. How many of you have owned a horse? Oh, fewer hands. Okay, hey. Hey, tribe. What's up? So things that you know when you study horses intimately is that if a horse can make another horse move its feet, then that horse is the boss. All right. And so we talk about this with my adult amateurs. I'm like, see how your horse Halo is making all the other horses move away from him when he looks at them. Now you know something about your horse. He's a boss, which mostly means that he's kind of a jerk. But I don't say that to these owners who love their horses so much, right? I'm like, he's very confident, and that's excellent. I love the way that horses go about their business when they're loose in a pasture together. You know, they move each other around and they pin their ears and then they like roll in the mud and stand up and buck and then run across the pasture. And I'm like, oh, cliches were made to talk about horses in motion. They're the best things ever, right? And over the course of the last 11 years that I have taught at the stable that I teach at in East County, I have built really intimate relationships with these horses. Like, I know them. We work together. We are office mates, I guess. We're definitely members of the same team. I know that when spring comes around and Dutch, this big bay warm blood, he starts to shake his head all the time. And he's just shaking his head like crazy. And everyone's like, what's wrong with Dutch? And I'm like, well, he's got flies in his ears, so we're just going to take some mineral oil and we're going to rub it in his ears and he's going to stop shaking his head like a crazy horse. Or one of the mares on the property, Faith, really likes to, when horses say hello to each other, they breathe into each other's noses. They'll walk up and they'll sniff into each other's noses. And if you hold really still and a horse likes you, they'll introduce themselves to you that way too. So Faith really likes it if you just kind of hold still when you go in to get her and she gets to breathe in your face and then you breathe in her face and then you can go on doing your human things because she's gotten to do kind of her horse things with you. One of my wonderful lesson horses, Charger, gets what we call an emergency itch, which means that just like he cannot stand the itch that's on his knee any longer, and it does not matter what the child on top of him is trying to get him to do. He is stopping, and he is going to put his head down, and he's going to itch his knee. And I say, that's an emergency itch. Just don't fall off. You're fine. Everything's fine. He'll be done in a second. One of our other lesson horses, Hummer, he's like very nonchalant. This is a horse who's very cool. He and I have worked together for a long time. I can stop him with the power of my voice from across an arena, which is great because he teaches the very little kids how to ride. So they're like bouncing sideways. I'm like, just, and now let's walk. And he walks and he's wonderful. But when a little kid takes their feet out of the stirrups, you know, they kick a lot. And he goes, every time they do that, he's very ticklish in his ribs and nobody cares. And they're just like, I'm taking my feet out of the stirrups. And he goes, what are you doing to me? And I'm like, don't, Hummer, everything's fine. Just hang on. They'll be off in a second. So I have spent my life learning about the bodies of horses in motion. And it really has only been in the last few years that I have had to learn about the bodies of horses in death. And that has not been super awesome for me. I have seen horses into their next life 3 times in the last 4 years, which feels like a combination of sort of like very bad timing on my part, and also part of the responsibility that happens when you're involved with a stable that has up to 30 horses at a time. You know, they get old, catastrophes happen. And that's something that is an education that I had to have. Like they say, like the first cut is the deepest. The first horse that I ever had to, that I ever had to kill was a pony that was 27 years old that was the mascot of the farm that I work at. She had had babies on the farm. She had taught like 4 generations of people how to ride. She was the first pony that my darling niece ever rode. And my boss and I couldn't let her go. She was getting older. She was really slowing down. We retired her. Her teeth got really bad. So we started just like soaking her food and water. So it was a mush. And we're like, Dolly's fine. This is fine. She can go on like this for a while. And then she stopped really wanting to like go to the turnout to play with her friends. And we're like, that's cool. Everything's fine. We'll let her live in this really big corral with the goats and she won't be lonely and she won't have to move around and everything's fine. Like Dolly can keep going like this, right? And that was kind of the world of denial that my boss and I were living in. And then my boss went on vacation to Mexico for 2 weeks, which like that was awesome for her. And as I often do, I stayed at her house on the property and I had this like great dinner party with a bunch of my friends. And we drank like 1,500 bottles of wine, as one does. And the next morning I get a phone call from the guy who cleans our stalls saying, Dolly's bad, you need to come down here. And so I did. And I'm gonna like, this was a hard story for me to like figure out how I was gonna tell. So I'm gonna skip that part, okay? And I'm gonna move to the after, all right? So the vet arrives and it's a Sunday morning. So our vet is basically, he's an on-call vet and he's got to be 65 and he's a surfer. So he's got his surfboard strapped to the top of his like truck and he's wearing his flip-flops because he's been at the beach. And he basically tells me like, this is the end of our pony. And all I can hear is white noise at this point. Like I've been up for 3 hours. I have a 1,500 bottle of wine hangover. And I feel like my life is falling apart. Like I don't know how to say goodbye to this pony. So that option is taken away from me. And what he says to me is, where do you want her to get picked up? And I'm thinking, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Just tell me what to do, Dr. Smith. And in the haze of the white noise, he's like, well, let's just do it here and you can use the tractor to move her. And I'm like, sure. I cannot use the tractor to move. I don't drive a tractor. Like, what are you talking about? But everything is happening so fast. And so he puts the pony down and I look at Oscar, who does our stalls, and I'm like, Oscar, Greg said that you can just use the tractor and you can put her in the tractor. And like, she's a little pony, right? So she, like, her withers, which is the highest part of her back, probably came up to like my mid hip. So she's a small pony. I'm crying. You can use the tractor, and then you can use the tractor, and you can get her in the truck and everything. I've got to go. Oscar's like, yeah, okay. Okay, I've got it. So I flee to the house where a couple of my guests, like my guests still are, because when you drink 1,500 bottles of wine, your friends have to stay the night. That's very responsible. And I walk into the house, and my friend is making coffee, and I say, I just had to kill my pony. And I lose my shit. And like, and then I had to go like take an emergency nap, the way that your body sometimes has to shut down from trauma, right? You're like, I'm turning it off. Well, while I'm taking my emergency nap after having to kill my pony, Oscar is scooping her up in the bucket of the tractor. And the idea was that the people were going to come pick up the body, right? And this is where, okay, I promise the story gets funny again, you guys. Don't look so sad out there. That now she's dead, okay? It doesn't matter. Now she's just a body. It's just a thing, right? I'm never going to stop crying about it, but she's a carcass. So Oscar has scooped her up in the tractor, and like, then just don't ask me what he was thinking. I don't know. But then he's just kept the bucket up, right? Like this. Now, she's a small pony, but she's not that fucking small, all right? She's got to be at least 700 pounds. So while I'm having my emergency grief nap, she falls out of the fucking bucket. And then, you know, the people who are down there at the barn still are sort of like, what's going to happen now? And Oscar's like, don't worry, I've got this. I'll get her back in the bucket. And then I'll prop it up with 2x4s. That's safe. And then cover her with a tarp. This is not the way that you handle the bodies of horses once they are dead, okay? You just sort of put a tarp over them while they're on the ground, and then nobody notices, and everything is fine. But I'll tell you what people notice is a fucking pony body in an elevated bucket of a tractor, 2x4s, and a tarp, okay? That is not subtle. That is not, like, very respectful. So then Oscar has to leave, and I get a phone call, and it's D&D. Now, I have intentionally had this like intense ignorance of what happens to horses when they die. I don't know what D&D stands for. Don't ask me. I think one word is disposal. That's upsetting, and so I don't try and think of what the other word is. And I also don't really know what they do with the bodies of horses anymore. My boss, who's like a very old school San Diego person, is like, well, back in the day, we used to take the carcasses to the zoo. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's not what happens anymore, you guys. It's fine. So Oscar leaves. I get a call from D&D, and they're like, we're here for the pony. I'm like, that's great. Okay, I'm on my way down. So down I come, and there she is in the bucket. Little hooves sticking out, tarp over, 2x4s holding the bucket up. Oscar nowhere to be found. And I think the idea that my vet had was that we could just tip her into the truck, right? Because the D&D truck has these high metal walls because they put things inside of the truck that they don't really want people to see. So my vet was like, oh yeah, put her in the bucket of the tractor and then you can just tip her in. Well, the D&D lady, who I'll describe in a second, was like, no, you can't tip her in. You'll destroy my truck, which like, of course. You can't drop a 700-pound weight from a height into a truck. That's not a thing. That's only in commercials, and they don't use bodies for that. So the D&D lady is like, she's very small, and she's very old, and she has this crazy gray hair and these crazy super big eyes, and she's a very close talker, so she gets, like, very close to you, and she's like, So how is your day today? I'm like, are you kidding me? I just woke up from my emergency nap and I'm never going to stop crying and my pony's in a bucket. And like, how do you think my day is? My day is not awesome. It's how my day is. And she's like, that tractor, no, you can't just put her in. You're going to have to put her on the ground. You're going to have to move the tractor. You're going to have to put her on the ground and then we'll put her in the thing. It'll be great. You've got this. I'm like, I don't think that I have this. So here is me sitting in the tractor. I'm like, I can turn this on. Yes, that will be step one. Success with turning it on, in case you were wondering. And then I'm like, okay, Now, to get the 2x4s out from underneath the bucket, I'm going to have to lift the bucket up a little. Okay, cool, cool, cool. 2x4s crashing to the ground. And then the bucket, I'm like, I'm going to lower the bucket. And I lower the bucket. And she's like, oh, yeah, no, this is great. This is great. I'll just back the truck right up. We've got this here. Now, let's just take the tarp off. And she just pulls the tarp off. And then there's my pony, who's very dead at this point. And, like, you know, eyes are sort of open. The tongue is hanging out. And the, like, rigor has started to set in a little bit because it's been several hours. And so her legs are, like, very stiff, like this. And I'm bawling again now, which is fantastic because I thought that the emergency nap was going to cure the tears, which it did not. So then she's like, okay, now just tip the bucket. I'm like, do you know how to drive a tractor? You can come in here and you can tip the bucket. She's like, no, liability. I can't, the insurance, I can't get in the tractor. I'm like, okay, fine. I'm going to tip the bucket. Well, rigor has set in and the pony is stuck in the bucket. So I can't just tip her out. She's like, okay, we'll winch her out. We'll do what? We'll winch her out? What? Okay, this is the way that my life is now. So back up the truck comes and the ramp drops down and here comes the winch and she wraps it around the pony and she starts winching her out. And I'm literally heaving sobs at this point. I'm the only other person on the property. And, like, again, this is the first pony that my darling beloved niece has ever ridden. And I've been teaching with this pony for 10 years. And where the fuck is my boss? She's drinking margaritas in Mexico. And I'm stuck here with this fucking catastrophe. And then the D&D lady looks at her and she's like, oh, now, you're just a little thing. You can ride around town with me for a while. And I'm like, what? No. What? My pony is going to just be in this truck before she goes to the mysterious place, which I don't know where it is and I don't want to know. And she's going to be riding around town with this crazy lady in this truck. Then the lady says to me, she's like, now, did you get any hair from the tail? And those of you who don't own horses may not know that this is sort of like, there's like an industry of memorabilia from parts of your horse that you can have. They're too big to cremate the way that we do with dogs. It's like prohibitively expensive unless you're a very rich and very sort of crazy person. And so you can pay a little bit of money to get these beautiful bracelets made of like hair from the tail or the mane of your horse. And I'm standing there thinking, oh my God, no, I haven't gotten any hair from her tail. And like, my boss is in Mexico. And like, what about my niece? And what if I don't do it? But what if it's too sentimental? But what if I don't do it? And then like, people feel regret. All of this is my responsibility because I am the only person here and I have had to oversee this catastrophic loss. And I was like, yeah, cut me some hair, please. So she cuts off a couple wads of hair and hands it to me and like shakes my hand very vigorously, which I was like, what I really need is a hug, but I really don't want you to hug me. I don't know you at all. So I had the tail hair and the pony went into the D&D truck to go for a ride around town before, like, once the D&D lady was done with her errands, then she would go to wherever it was she was going to go. And I guess that like the thing that I learned from that catastrophe was that this is nothing like the death of a dog or of a cat where, you know, they might be laying down already. Like they often are when we put them to sleep is our favorite kind of, euphemism. And as I was preparing this story, I had these lines from a poem by a poet, Brian Henry, like ringing in my mind. Every dog deserves an elegy when it comes home from the oven. And like those lines have haunted me. I read that poem maybe 10 years ago and they have stuck with me. And I feel that like every dog deserves an elegy. But what does that mean? What does that mean for horses? And I think that the big lesson that I learned from this first traumatically terrible death of a horse in my life was that you just can't, when they're that big and there's so much to handle, like you can't wait for a catastrophe. You have to like be strong enough to make that decision sooner. And so the next two deaths over which I have presided have been increasingly less traumatic. To this final death, which was from another one of our lesson ponies in October, who we didn't leave the property. We scheduled a date. She spent the afternoon like eating alfalfa hay and being brushed and told how wonderful she was. And it was very calm and not and the kind of thing that I'm capable of talking about in a way that I'm not really capable of talking about the last hours of Dolly's life. We say in the horse world, and this was something I hadn't heard until I started having to kill my ponies, that we give them a good life and a soft landing. And that phrase, like soft landing, is actually literal with a horse because they are standing when the blue bottles are injected. And you have to hold their head up and look them in the eye and help them go down gentle, which is another thing that horse people say. And that is a burden. It's really a burden. It's not easy. And it's also kind of a major responsibility, and it's an honor. And to help them, to look them in the eye and to give them the soft landing and to help them go down gentle. And that is my story. Thank you very much.
The Narrators is produced by Robert Rutherford, Mary Robertson, Aaron Rollman, and me, Ron Doyle. Our assistant producer is Sydney Crane. Our theme music is by Whalehawk. And our founder and executive producer is Andrew Orvidal. A very special thanks to our amazing sponsors, Illegal Pete's, Sexy Pizza, From the Hip Photo, and Renegade Brewing Company. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. And join us at one of our live monthly shows, which take place every second Tuesday of the month at Tiger Tiger Tavern in San Diego, California, and every third Wednesday of the month at Bumport Theater in Denver, Colorado. Both shows start at 8 p.m. and are always free to attend. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, and for past episodes, photos from our live shows, and a list of our upcoming events and themes, please visit thenarrators.org. Thanks for listening.